All right, welcome back to the Plan Wisely podcast. I am Eric Garcia, and today I am very excited for our guest. I've actually been looking forward to recording this podcast and having Sarah on, but Sarah Falau is a psychologist and the president of Data Point. How are you doing, Sarah?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Awesome. So the reason I have you here is you recently, I say recently in the past couple years, published the book, The Next Millionaire Next Door. And this is really a kind of a life's work that your dad started back a while ago. So if you can, tell me a little bit about your background and what led you to write this book.
Yeah, so I, like you said, it was my father's work that led me to where I am today and to actually finishing that book. He and I started it together, but he passed away while we were working on it. So I was left with the task of finishing it. And so that was published in late 2018. But the way that I sort of landed here, if you will, he was a marketing professor, so he studied wealthy Americans for his entire life. And I was an industrial psychologist. So my work and my background was in creating assessments and helping organizations find great employees or promote individuals into different jobs by using, you know, again, best practices in psychology. And so, you know, I started looking at his work and kind of the research and the data that he collected, and really began working with him probably around 2009, started thinking about what we could do together to really kind of celebrate the fact that it had been, you know, 20 years. It was coming up on the 20th anniversary of The Millionaire Next Door in a few years. And so we began, you know, planning for that. And like I said, you know, kind of started that, but really wanted to see if there were differences. If, you know, a lot of people that read the original book said that certainly there was survivorship bias, which just basically means, you know, he only surveyed the people that actually became wealthy. But if you dive into that book, you'll see that not only did he survey individuals who were really good at building wealth, but he also included people that had really high incomes that were terrible at managing their finances. And so you could see the difference. But anyhow, in the new book, we looked at some of the same characteristics and some of the same habits and lifestyle factors that went into how people became millionaires on their own.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to make a confession here that I didn't I was exposed to your dad's research when I first started working in the insurance industry. This is the early 2000s. I honestly did not read the book until much, much later. Mm. But the only thing I remember was one of my managers would say, "Hey, Eric, do you know that the average millionaire in this country," and I don't know if this is said verbatim in the book, I don't remember, yeah, "but the average millionaire lives in a 3-bedroom, 1-story ranch house and drives a Ford F-150. Right, so that's kind of what I remember is, hey, wait a minute, this picture that sometimes we think of what a millionaire looks like is maybe not necessarily what a millionaire actually looks like.
Yeah, so definitely the Ford piece was right. I can't remember or recall exactly about the house, but I think that's what was so surprising back in the late 90s was basically that he highlighted the fact that, you know, millionaires and individuals that were decamillionaires could live next door to you and you would never know it because they're not driving and buying and wearing things that look expensive or luxurious. They're really just kind of down to earth and building their wealth slowly over time. And that was really surprising back then.
And we're going to talk about what this portrait of a millionaire and what that millionaire looks mm-hmm. like. But I want to talk really quick about why this matters, because some people might be listening. They're like, millionaire, it's so like unattainable, this idea of becoming a millionaire. And I think for a lot of people, they think that way. Mm-hmm. So I want to make a quick correlation here, not between millionaire status or becoming a millionaire to financial success. Mm-hmm. Why all this mm-hmm. matters and what I think is so important about your dad's work and what's so important about your book is that money is such an everyday part of our life that impacts just about everything that we do, right? Where we mm-hmm. live, where we shop, the clothes we wear, the cars we drive. So if we don't have a good grasp on how to manage our money, then that's going to cause a lot of other problems. And what's so cool about your work is that it's so behavioral driven. It's looking, what are these characteristics that are important to, yeah, becoming a millionaire, but I would say even more fundamentally, what are these characteristics, these behaviors that are going to lead to financial success, to financial independence, or more importantly, which I think resonates with more people, financial security, this idea of knowing that, hey, I'm going to be okay financially. There's some staggering stats out there, like what the average or nearly half of Americans couldn't cover a $400 expense without selling something or borrowing something. That's staggering. So one out of every two people don't have $400 lying around. You know, the American Psychology Association said that 64% of Americans feel money is a somewhat or very significant source of stress within their lives, right? So if any of these numbers resonate with anyone who's listening, you got to listen to this entire show because we're going to talk about some really cool things. And there's some other things you point out in your book is just, you know, we all know people, or maybe this is us, and this is, if I say something that comes across as judgmental, like Eric's looking down at people financially, that's not the case. I mean, this is reality that people deal with, right? So maybe this is you, or this is a neighbor of yours or a family member of yours that you live in a house, or you know someone who lives in a house that you can't afford at the current income level, right? Or you're in a neighborhood with, as you say, conspicuous signs of wealth, right? Expensive yards and fancy pools and expensive cars, or every Christmas, you know, when we go pull the Christmas lights down, we're faced with, should we go buy more Christmas lights? Oh my gosh, I'm going to spend all that money on Christmas lights. All these signs of wealth, right? This is not something that's public, but a little bit of money saved for retirement. I see that as a financial advisor. Or people who are constantly worried that they're not, and I'm seeing this more and more, especially in the current environment, they're more and more worried that their current lifestyle is in jeopardy.
So, you know, I think that, you know, the behavioral side of all of that certainly is kind of identifying, you know, how you're doing managing your financial life, because, you know, what we've seen from our research is that, individuals who tend to kind of put processes in place and, again, like you said, you know, save and sort of spend within their means or below their means, tend to be more satisfied. They tend to view themselves as, you know, really effective when it comes to managing their financial life. And like you said, that translates into other aspects of relationships and other kinds of satisfaction measures like job satisfaction. So, you know, it's definitely the case that as you can sort of build skills, again, if you think about managing your financial life as a job, then you can say, okay, well, what do I need to be able to do that job well? And so that's, you know, really what we focus on at Data Points, but certainly, you know, what was included in the book as well.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions here to kind of set the tone for the rest of the conversation, because you're going to give us that silver bullet, right?
I wish I could. we'll see.
It's simple, but just not easy, right?
Yep.
All right. So true or false, okay? The same skills, abilities, and competencies that are required to become financially independent and successful on our own are timeless.
Yeah, so that is true, that there are certain characteristics, certain sort of behaviors and things that we can do each and every day that will allow us to build wealth. And those have not changed, you know, from the time, you know, my father was researching affluent Americans, again, the ones that really built wealth on their own, to today. And, you know, that's not to say that some of us have it easier than others. Absolutely, that's the case. But from the research that we've conducted, we know that there are, again, certain kind of behavioral patterns and again, characteristics that lead to wealth building. And then
that's an important point because the rules are not changing in terms of these characteristics, regardless of your circumstance. If you want the best chance of financial success, the rules in terms of what you need to do or the characteristics, the internal characteristics that you need to embody haven't changed over time. Right.
Right. That's exactly. Perfect. Yep. Yep.
Awesome. Yep. So one more true or false question.
Yep.
All right. Regardless of your status, age, income level, you can find your path to wealth and financial independence.
Yeah, you know, this one is true as well. And that's, you know, part of the research that we've done demonstrates that, again, these same kind of competencies or wealth building competencies are predictive of your net worth, even, you know, again, despite how old you are or what your income level is. You know, we've done these studies with affluent Americans and high income earners, as well as those that, you know, again, are making, you know, maybe $25,000 a year. So the same kind of characteristics hold true.
Yeah. So this is another interesting point, because this is something we hear often, that wealth is only, or building wealth is only for certain people, right? Certain people who come from a certain background, who have a certain education level. All these things certainly help and make it easier to build wealth. But I guess it's kind of like, and we were talking about this in the green room, right? Like if any parents out there or any adults who don't have kids who watch kids' movies in secret have watched Ratatouille, Chef Gusteau says anyone can cook, right? Anyone can become a millionaire, anyone can have financial success. Now, to that point, you know, my dad came to this country in the early 60s. And he has had financial success. He's built a successful business. He had to work hard. I mean, he came over here at 15, didn't speak the language, held three jobs, got a GED, didn't finish college until much, 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 much later in life. He had to work harder than maybe some, but still was able to achieve financial success.
You know, I think that story is very, you know, similar to a lot of the individuals that have written in to my father over the years, and certainly individuals that he interviewed as well, is that, you know, the wealth building story isn't always rosy. It's not, you know, that there's no work required and that you can kind of wake up and everything will be fine. I think that, you know, a lot of us who maybe have either had success or we've, you know, kind of built a business or something like that, sometimes you don't even realize how much work you've put into something that's become successful. Certainly that's the case for our children, right? They don't see all the work that goes into a lot of what we do. But it is the case that hard work and discipline are required, because not spending money is not fun. I mean, at least for someone that you know, enjoys it. And so, again, that's just one example. But, you know, again, the long nights, the, like you said, holding multiple jobs, all those kinds of things, that's hard work. And a lot of what is required to build wealth takes hard work as well.
Yeah. And oftentimes the cards are stacked against some people.
Of course, yes, absolutely.
I mean that's a reality, unfortunately. And you know, my dad tells stories about how he was denied loans, you know, because of you people, right? You people come to our country, and that's the story. And I think one of the things that led to his success was just kind of this dogged focus. Like, he was just focused. He was going to have success, regardless of what anyone said or did. Yep. And I think that was a key characteristic for him. So
Absolutely. Let's
talk really quick about what are we talking about? Like, what's this millionaire? Who is this millionaire? Are we talking about like Warren Buffett and Bill Gates? Who are these millionaires that we're talking about?
Yeah, you know, in the research we did, so the study started in 2015-16, it really went and focused in on, you know, again, high net worth, high, you know, affluent neighborhoods and individuals in terms of the survey. And so what we found was very similar to the study back in the 90s, which was that they tend to be, you know, older married men who, you know, again, typically have an income of somewhere around, you know, $250,000 a year. And many of them are small business owners. They tend to have a college degree, much more so, I would say. That was a change over time from the 90s. They have more of them had college degrees. But they continue to budget. They continue to have, you know, good relationships with their spouses if they are married, and most of them are married. And they also recognize that their parents were frugal as well. So that tends to be kind of a consistent theme, is that they, for the most part, the majority of millionaires saw some of those frugal behaviors being exhibited while they grew up. And so, you know, I think that that tends to be sort of a demographic portrait of what a millionaire looks like in America. But again, from the other research that we've done, we've seen that those same behaviors that allow these individuals to become wealthy are the same that allow others to reach financial success as well.
Yeah, what's interesting to me in just kind of working with people and getting to see their finances is work with people who make a lot of money and work with people who make less money than a lot. Mm. And sometimes the people who make less money have higher net worths, right? They're
sure.
worth
yeah,
more
absolutely.
Than some of those high income. We're going to get to that a little bit later about the relationship between income and net worth. But I think what's important, you know, you talk about they tend to be older. And what I find working with younger people, and I'm going to throw myself into this mix, we try to accumulate everything that our parents accumulated over 20 or 30 years. We try to accumulate it in 5 years, right? We want our dream house early. We want the car we want early. We want the vacation rental early.
Yep.
And we don't realize that most of these people who built wealth built it over time.
Right. I think that that time was always on their side. And certainly we know that age is a predictor of net worth. There's just no doubt about it. The longer you have to accumulate wealth, the wealthier in theory you could be or should be. So I think that, that is important to remember. I think it's also kind of, and I know we may touch on this, but it is a reminder, especially when we're thinking about our younger days, that, you know, if you saw your parents or friends and family members that were wealthier than maybe you are right now, you may, like you said, you may desire to have kind of that lifestyle right now today. And, you know, that's a lesson we're trying to teach our girls, is that, you know, that's something that you have to work hard for, and that it takes time, and that you don't expect to kind of, you know, walk out of college or walk out of wherever, some kind of training program that you may have been in, and all of a sudden things are going to be fine, you know, in terms of, oh, I'm going to have exactly the kind of house I want and exactly the kind of car I want. Yeah, absolutely. Those things take time.
Yeah.
And that's can be challenging.
So I think that's key. So one, if you're listening, you're like, oh, I don't make $250,000 and I'm not white and I'm not a man, so I can't have financial
right,
success.
Yep,
that's not
yep.
true. That's not true, because the best chance at financial success, regardless of your background, are some of the things that we're about to talk about. And one last thing before you give us or a couple last things before you give us the silver bullet, right? The magic to building wealth. And I want to drive this point home. This stat actually surprised me. And what it tells me is that there's an incredible amount of socioeconomic mobility, meaning people can move up and down in the socioeconomic categories, if you will, from lower to middle to upper class very quickly in this country. And this is the stat that kind of took me surprise, is that 86% of millionaires are first generation. 86% meaning 86% of people, this I think was a 2017 number. Meaning that 86% of people who said they were millionaires did not inherit that money. It wasn't legacy money. We're not talking about rich families passing money generation after generation. These are first generation people who built it.
Right. And I think that, you know, what that reminds us of, and I think you did a good, you know, you helped to explain that certainly, is that, you know, we've all probably known someone that had a wealthy parents, but yet they're, you know, maybe not your friend, but their brother or sister frittered it away, right? So they inherited all this money and all of a sudden they don't have any. So that's kind of to your point about going up and down. But yes, what we've found, and pretty consistently, even with other research that's out there, is that many of the millionaires today are first generation, the majority of them. And again, that's because some of the wealth that is transferred to individuals, so if it's, you know, passed down after someone passes away, isn't always used in the best way possible to allow that to last. And there are a lot of different kind of psychological reasons for that. Partially, it's due to the hard work piece, which is, hey, I didn't have to work for anything, so I'm just going to kind of spend it. I don't know what it took to get this money, so you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, that's definitely something that has been a pretty consistent finding over time.
Yeah. So the myth of most rich people, quote unquote rich or millionaires, inherited it, or they got lucky, or I mean that's just the myth. That's not true. The majority of people who have financial success have put work in. In fact, there's a couple really. I want to read a couple quick quotes from your book, and then we're going to hop into some of these behavioral characteristics of people who have financial success. So, you say achieving economic success depends not on what's happened in the past, but instead on the behaviors that you employ today and tomorrow.
You know, I think that this touches on one of the components of personality that has been found to really predict success in a lot of different areas, but that's, you know, viewing our current actions as something that has more impact on our future than outside or past experiences that we may have had. And so, you know, we certainly, like I said, we see that across a lot of different areas of our life, but particularly with finances and again, making spending decisions in particular, you know, recognizing that each and every action you take related to your money is going to have some long-term consequence is a mindset that is very useful as you are thinking about sort of those competencies of building wealth.
Yeah. What I like about that, and to me that statement kind of sums up a lot of the kind of like almost like the premise of the book is that there's a level that we control, like there's a level of control that we have over having financial success. Certainly there's a systemic issues and there's outside influences, but by and large we have some ability to control our ability to have financial success. And you say, here's another, a little bit later in the book, you say building wealth requires a consistent pattern of financial behaviors. If this starts early, the likelihood of ongoing success is greater. Again, same theme, right? 50 pages later in the book, same thing.
Yeah, right. That's good. We're consistent. Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, think about, you know, anyone that performs well, that, you know, that's, you know, great at their job or that's great in any kind of, you know, specific career field. You know, they more than likely have been sort of honing those skills for a long, long time. And so I think, you know, even kind of piggybacking on what we just talked about, it is the case that some of us are not well prepared as we move into our young adulthood to manage our financial lives because we didn't have anyone showing us how to do that. You know, it's not something you're really taught at school. You know, unless you just have an interest in money related issues, you probably never read a book about it or, you know, that kind of thing. But again, it's a job we all have to do. And so, yeah. You know, it is important to recognize that there are these characteristics that you can build and improve those characteristics over time.
Yeah. So let's get into the characteristics.
Sure.
Yeah. Let's talk about what are those behavioral characteristics that lead to building wealth. And you alluded to this earlier. The first one is frugality. So it's a common theme throughout the book. So talk about the connection of being frugal to having financial success. And I guess also explain, what does it mean to be frugal? Does it mean to be cheap?
So frugality is, you know, very much at the extremes can be kind of that cheap factor, you know, and so that's, I think, why a lot of people equate the two. But really what frugality refers to is just being smart and economical with any resource that you have, whether that's, you know, your money or resources you have at home, your time even. And so, you know, what my father found, certainly through his work looking at self-made millionaires, as well as the work that we do at Data Points, is that, you know, being disciplined and smart about using your resources is a clear path to building wealth. It's part of building wealth. It's not everything.
Yeah.
But especially, again, if you're someone that is making, you know, an average level of income or, you know, again, you have a lot of different, you know, family members that you're caring for, it's very important to ensure that you're being smart about the things that you use, including your money. And part of that does have to do with discipline. you know, being disciplined and how you use things. And that's where that, you know, kind of, you know, thinking about the details of all of your finances comes into play as well.
Yeah, this idea of frugality is a common theme. Again, read a couple quick quotes from the book, just to reiterate this fact that that frugality is such a big part. 70% of millionaires in the last study said their parents were very frugal, so they learned it from their parents. Being frugal is the cornerstone to building wealth. Prudent spending and saving allow for economic opportunities that many can only dream of. And then finally, there's evidence to suggest that parental frugality and money management habits lead to their children's increased economic success. So if you're a parent and you're thinking, I don't make enough money to ever have financial success, well, your behavior may not lead to your success, but it's certainly an indicator to whether or not your kid's going to have success.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's hard as a parent to think about all the things that you're doing that your kids may remember in the future. But I think if, you know, again, demonstrating to those in your household that, hey, you know, we're not going to waste whatever it might be just because we have a lot of it right now, is an important skill and kind of experience for everyone to have. And it also, of course, has the benefit of, again, predicting net worth regardless of your age or income. So we know that those who tend to be more frugal than their neighbors tend to be able to build wealth.
Yeah, and I think of frugality almost through the lens of this idea of stewardship. And you kind of mentioned this idea of resources. Resources are not necessarily financial, but any material item that we have, do we steward it well? Do we take good care of it? And the idea of stewardship is I'm caring for something that belongs to somebody else. Am I doing a good job doing it? That's kind of how I associate or relate frugality as something important. And part of it, you talked about self-control in spending. As I was kind of prepping for this, this idea kept popping into my head, this question is why do we buy things that we don't need, right? Mm-hmm. That's the opposite of frugal. So why do we buy things that we don't need?
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of different reasons for that, certainly, and you know, part of it may be just our experience and what we're used to. So if we grew up kind of having everything at our fingertips and being offered everything, it may be just kind of how we're built, right? We like new things, and that kind of thing. And there are also differences in kind of our attitudes and interests as well that you have to think about. So, you know, many of us like to go shopping. That's fun. We like to look at new things. We like to, you know, have new things at home. And so I think that what's important about that is to recognize that that we are all different. We all have different attitudes about, you know, spending money. But then, you know, part of that frugal piece has that, again, that component of discipline and having a budget and recognizing how you can kind of achieve, you know, being able to shop and having something new within a budget that's really built for the long term. And so I think that, you know, in particular is a way to sort of get around, you know, the fact that many of us do enjoy spending money.
Yeah, you keep talking about budget. And I think I don't have this stat written down, but it was somewhere like in the 60%-ish neighborhood of millionaires still live on a budget.
Right. Absolutely. So I find that interesting as well. You'd think, okay, well, I'm at this level. I don't really need to budget. But the truth is, it's simply a roadmap to ensuring financial success. I mean, if you want to talk about it in a different way, you know, oftentimes we measure, you know, kind of budgeting attitudes at data points. And what we know is that some of us feel like a budget sounds really restrictive. But if you can reframe it, even in your own mind, to think, okay, this is a roadmap. I need to stick on this roadmap no matter what to get to where I want to go.
Yeah, the one stat that I did write down, it said that 70% of millionaires know the cost of their food and the clothes and their housing, right? So I'll often ask that question to clients, like how much do you spend in groceries every month? And there's, you know, it's crickets. We just don't think about that,
right?
But yet 70% of millionaires know the cost of these things.
Yep. Yeah, and somebody in the household has to know that, right? So if I'm not the one, for example, in my household who, you know, is very attentive to those kinds of details, then we've got to make sure somebody is. And I, of course, would do it if I had to, but thankfully, my husband tends to be the one with an accounting background that really likes those details and can attend to them. But the point is that for a household to be successful, there has to be some, you know, focus on that. Absolutely.
Yeah. So in light of frugality, we keep making reference to this idea of discipline, and discipline's another one of those characteristics. And I want to tie a couple things in here, frugality and discipline. You say, or in 2000, you say in the book, 95% of millionaires agreed that it was discipline that was critical to their success. And in 2016, 91% of millionaires rated being disciplined as an important success factor. Specifically, discipline being required to take income and transform it into wealth. Mm-hmm. Right? So the discipline to take income and transform it into wealth. I think this is maybe like another myth that we think that there's a relationship or direct correlation between high income and high net worth or high wealth. Talk a little bit about that.
So, you know, again, I think that a lot of us, kind of going back to what we were talking about earlier, where, you know, right away we think we need all of these things, you know, when we come out of a school or we get a new job or something like that. A lot of us confuse a high income level with, you know, being financially successful. So, you know, the moment I, you know, have a certain level of income, I'll feel like I've achieved my goals. And the truth is that that's just, you know, that income, if you spend it, you have nothing else, right? So if I spend everything I make and then some, I'm going to be, you know, I won't be setting myself or my household up for the future. And so that's why it's important to recognize that net worth or wealth is a better indicator of sort of household financial success. And in order to take any kind of income, whether, and especially if it's, you know, maybe not high, is that you have to be disciplined in how you're spending and how you're saving. Mm-hmm. That is what allows these millionaires and, again, others, you know, the other folks that are really on the path towards achieving their financial goals to be successful, is having discipline. And it really, again, it ties back into the budgeting. It ties back into, you know, creating a long-term plan and really just, you know, deciding that that's something that you and if you're, you know, in a household, your entire household is going to focus on. And yeah, so millionaires, no matter, again, if we're talking about the dot-com era of the 90s or, you know, in the 2000s, they report that discipline is a key success factor.
Yeah, it's pretty simple math, right? If I make $100,000 and need $150,000 to support my lifestyle, I'm going in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. But if I make $100,000, I only need $75,000 to support my lifestyle, I'm building wealth. Mm-hmm. Right? And so you can make $250,000 a year and need $275,000 to support your lifestyle. And I make $100,000 and only need $75,000. You make more money than me, so you may look more successful on the outside, mm-hmm. but who's really having more financial success long term, who's really building wealth and has more financial security?
Right. You know, I think that the way that it is often, or the way that we have to explain this, and we often are having to explain it to our daughters, is, you know, the student that comes in, it looks like they have everything brand new. You know, their parents drive, you know, a current year car and, you know, everything else. You know, they make a lot of assumptions about that student, right? They mm-hmm. they assume that their parents are wealthy and they assume they can have anything they want. And, you know, we're often having to explain to them, well, that they may be, right? They may be kind of that 1% out there that, you know, can spend whatever they want and it won't matter. They have tons of money coming in, or they've inherited everything. Who knows? But at the same time, it may be that they're really just living high, that they mm-hmm. are spending every dime they make and they are very focused on, you know, kind yep. of outward appearances. And in 10, 15 years, you know, when their kids go to college or when they want to retire in 20 or 30 years, it'll be really hard for them. They will have to continue that income to, you know, and in order to stay on that treadmill.
Yeah, I love that you quoted in one of the opening chapters, you quoted Proverbs. It's my favorite book because there's just so much financial wisdom.
Oh, totally.
He said, one man pretends to be rich and has nothing. Another pretends to be poor and has great wealth.
Right.
So appearances are often deceiving.
Yep, absolutely. Right?
Just because you pull up in a Tesla or a BMW or a Mercedes doesn't mean you're rich.
Right. Absolutely. Yep.
So this is a perfect segue and leads to one of the last points that I want to talk about is this idea of social indifference. Mm-hmm. I guess translated for some people, like social indifference, what's that? The translated, it's keeping up with the Joneses, right?
Yep.
You say social, this is powerful. You say social indifference predicts net worth regardless of age, income, or how much wealth someone inherits worth given. Explain what you mean by this.
Yeah, so, you know, social indifference really, like you said, it's this ability or set of behaviors that indicate somebody really doesn't care about what everybody else is driving, buying, and wearing, right? So they don't care to keep up with the Joneses. They don't even know what the Joneses are doing in some cases. And, you know, what my father certainly found, and academic research supports this as well, and we see this in the research we do at Data Points, is that those who can really spend in a way that's conducive to their own goals and ignores the consumption behaviors of their neighbors and friends tend to build wealth better than those that are heavily influenced by mm-hmm. how everybody else drives, you know, drives, buys, and wears things. And so, you know, certainly my father talked about this quite a bit, but the influence of your neighbors, your immediate neighbors, your friends and family members is very powerful, particularly for those of us who tend to be influenced by others and like to be around other people and are very agreeable. We want to go along to get along. In many cases, that can spell financial ruin. So he certainly talks about the fact that if you plant yourself in a very wealthy or, you know, high income producing neighborhood, it will be very challenging to keep up, if you will, with the social kind of kind of community side of that. And so, you know, thinking about, you know, especially if you're thinking about buying a home now or renting somewhere or whatever it might be, you know, recognizing that your neighbors could have an influence on you is important. But it's also the case that now we carry that, and I think that's how we've, you know, termed it, we carry that influence with us on our phones. We have Facebook. I can see what all my neighbors just bought. I know all my friends and their children that are graduating from high school and all the fun gifts they're having, you know, and all that kind of stuff.
All the beautiful curated content, right?
Yes. All those pictures of people on their front doorsteps and everybody looks great. And, you know, and of course it's some of it is, you know, it's hard to ignore in some cases, but those who can often tend to build wealth more so than their peers.
Yeah. You said in the book, but consuming today in anticipation of higher levels of future income, trying to keep up with the arms race of gadgets, cars, and accessories are universal problems that derail people from the economic success path and certainly the millionaire next door path. So, you know, this idea of trying to buy things that you can't afford, or if you're buying things because you think you're going to be able to afford them in the future, it's a recipe for failure, right? Because you want to keep up. I need the new iPhone. I need the new... I don't know. I need that new pair. I mean, in the book, y'all, you
new
interview
watch
people.
Or new,
designer jeans, right? Or
right,
sunglasses.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so I think there's a couple things there, you know, and some of it's related to social indifference, and some of it's just, you know, wanting to be able to, you know, essentially, like you said, kind of keep up with everybody around us. You know, there's certainly the case. It's certainly the case that, in terms of the buying decisions that you make, thinking about sort of what's influencing you. You know, I think about some of the things we did, especially early on when we first moved into our house. You know, I talk about this on a blog, but we had a birthday party for our daughter. And the only kind of reference I had ever seen about kids' birthday parties was this huge blowout birthday party that looked like a wedding reception, right? So I thought that's what you do for birthday parties. I just, you know, so we had this huge birthday party. It was almost ridiculous now thinking about it, but not as big as the one we had gone to. But, you know, I had that in my head of that's what a birthday party looks like.
That's what you're supposed to do.
Right. That's what you're supposed to do. When in fact, that was not at all what we should have been doing. And so I think that, you know, in some cases, we don't even recognize how we're being influenced until later. So, you know, keep being mindful of why you want that new car. You know, do you really need the new car, or is it because you're feeling sort of maybe left out, or, you know, what are some other ways that you could think about, you know, being involved with that same community, but not spending the way that they do. So that's kind of what's involved there.
I often say that personal finance is very personal. That's why, you know, financial planning is all about personal finance, and financial plans are very specific to what you're trying to accomplish, your goals and your objectives. And when you let those outside influences of what others are doing, or maybe unaware of what they're doing, they have no plan. You can't let that derail you from what you're trying to accomplish.
Right.
I think that's huge. And I'll close out this section on social indifference with this this last statement from your book, which I think is so powerful. And I think that this is key to really, it kind of summarizes everything. It says that the path to economic success necessitates a certain amount of restraint in consumption. It requires an awareness and inoculation from the consumerism and affluenza that plagues many households. That is such a powerful statement.
I think that it's hard to, you know, it's hard to recognize, like I said, how influenced we can be by, you know, not only the people around us who may be even spending beyond their means. We don't even recognize it, or we don't even know what, like you said, it's personal. We don't know what they make, or, you know, how much they have saved. But it's also consumerism in general. I think that just, you know, recognizing that we are very much a consumer-focused society, and you know, again, some of that can be fun and enjoyable, but it has to be put into context and aligned with everything else we want for our lives.
Yeah, in this world, in this COVID world we live in, as we're talking about vaccines, wouldn't it be great if there was a vaccine against consumerism? If we could just go get inoculated.
You no longer care about what people buy. Yep. That would be nice.
Some of the first financial advice I got when I started working, and these are from like successful people in the industry. They said, go buy an expensive car, get yourself into debt, because it's going to make you work harder. I'm looking back thinking, oh my gosh, what terrible advice, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my husband, again, attorney, but or accounting major, but he ended up being an attorney, and that's often what you know, they would with young kind of associates who are just starting out. They wanted them to buy big, huge houses, and, you know, that kind of thing, to make sure that they had their golden handcuffs kind of attached to that income.
Fake it till you make it, right? Mm-hmm. I was told that as well. You know, fake success until you make it, right? By driving an expensive car, wearing an expensive suit. But yeah, what terrible advice. So as we wrap up here, I want to end with one last question for you. I'd love to hear maybe some of the stuff that you're working on now, or anything that you find most interesting or surprising about your research.
Yeah, you know, right now we're working on some research in the field of, you know, kind of looking at investing decision making. So that's been, you know, we talk about that in the book, related to kind of the mistakes that we make as we build wealth, and millionaires certainly make mistakes as well. But particularly given kind of, you know, what's happening in the world, that's something that we're looking at. And then the other piece that we're diving into is our money personality. So how does the fact that we tend to be, let's say, really kind and caring, how does that impact us from a long-term financial success? And so we just actually put up on our website a financial personality assessment too, that you can take and learn about kind of where you fit. But so that's kind of the one of the key areas that we're focusing on as well.
That's actually one of the things that led me to you at Data Points, because I do some work with a child therapist and a couples counselor from time to time. And I was looking for some type of financial assessment and came across Data Points when I think you were just newly launched. So it's been a while. But awesome. Sarah, I am so appreciative of the time that you have given me and our listeners. This is fun stuff. There's so much to talk about. Like you mentioned, the investor decision making. That was almost the content of this podcast. So maybe I have to get you back on to talk about that, because it's super fascinating stuff. So thanks again. I appreciate you. I'll be following your work closely.
Thank you so much for having me. This was fun.
Awesome. Securities offered through Royal Alliance Associates, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through New Century Financial Group, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Insurance services offered through Garcia Financial Group, LLC. New Century Financial Group, LLC, Royal Alliance Associates, Inc., and Garcia Financial Group, LLC do not offer tax advice or tax services. Please consult your tax specialist for individual advice. We make no specific comments or recommendations on any tax-related details. Entities listed are not affiliated.